Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we just heard the story of Neil George, Senior Vice President, Acquisitions and Development, Africa and Middle East for Starwood Hotels and Resorts Worldwide. And he shared, you know, his whole journey, which included some very tragic moments and also some very exciting ones. You can catch all of that on our website at DubaiEye1038.com if you missed any of it. But now we have a woman who was the spearhead of a greenfield and a pioneer, a bit of a trailblazer, one of the first academic institutions to open up a top-ranked MBA program here in our city of dreams, the inspirational city of the world, Dubai. It is the story of Randa Basiso, the founding director of Manchester Business School for the Middle East. Let's hear a little bit more about her background.
Randa Basiso is the director of Middle East at Manchester Business School. She's responsible for the overall management, operations, strategic planning and business development of MBS in the region. Randa, a Lebanese national of Palestinian origin, was a driving force in setting up the school's Middle East Center in Knowledge Village in 2006. Today, it is the largest and fastest growing center in MBS International Network, supporting 1,600 part-time MBA students in the region. Randa has overseen the development of the MBS team and the launch of a range of products, services and initiatives, including the Manchester Innovation Award for Emiratis and the introduction of corporate education programs. MBS' latest innovation is the part-time 20-month Global Executive MBA program, which offers a more personalized, intense and international MBA experience. Randa is currently ranked amongst the Forbes 2014 list as one of the 200 most powerful Arab women in the executive management category, where she was ranked 49. Prior to joining Manchester Business School in 2005, Randa was Vice President of Projects International Training and Development in Kuwait, and she was International Business Manager for UKE Universities Worldwide, a British government-backed online education initiative.
Randa, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you so much.
So you're a Sting fan?
Yes, I am.
Okay, excellent. So this is one of your favorite songs.
It is. Thank you so much for playing it.
So what an adventure, you know, that you jumped on a plane to go and do a startup. There was a certain romance in the air for that, I think.
Well, I think I did fall in love with the idea of MBS and starting up such a presence for a world-class university in my home region has been a major transformation in my life, professionally and personally. It means a lot to me that I had the privilege of founding and establishing, developing and fastest growing center of Manchester Business School International Network here in Dubai, right in the heart of the Middle East.
And so when you came out here, there wasn't much. It was 2000. It wasn't much in terms of academic, international academic footprint. 2006. What was it like?
Well, I arrived in Dubai in 1999. This is when I made it home. I've been here close to 14 years. I've been working with the higher education sector since then in Dubai, and obviously the region of the Middle East well deserved its reputation as the hub of education. Was a very, very welcoming location for Manchester Business School when it decided to start its regional center in 2005. Started with a small cohort, 25 students. The welcome was overwhelming from the TCOM education cluster, Dubai Knowledge Village. At the time, it was one of the first top-tier universities to establish a presence here. And 3 years later, we reached the 1,000 mark student, and now we are the largest and fastest growing center. We are part of the community. We're welcomed with strong connections in the government as well as the private sector, with 1,600 ambassadors of MBS in the region. We're very proud of what we've achieved.
I think that's one of the beauties of Dubai, and I think one of the famous quotes from His Highness Sheikh Mohammed is, you know, we're in the business of creating more businesses. And when you look at the model, they have brought in so many brands, not just in the academic sector, but in almost every single sector. This is the stopping point for any multinational or international, or for even some companies, the first place, you know, for many European organizations to expand is Dubai over another European country. Like if they're only going to be in two countries, the second one is often Dubai now, and I think it's competing with Singapore, Hong Kong, but it's right up there. It's taking global market share every day, and I think the only people who benefit is you know, the people who live here, that you have access to so many different. And in fact, the sponsor of our show is one of them, the ICAEW Institute of Chartered Accountant of England and Wales, mm-hmm. also you know, followed the same strategy as MBS, that Dubai is the area or the region where you want to set up your base camp to access the entire Middle East, African, and in some instances even Asian geographies.
Absolutely. And one of the most recent studies that the Dubai International Academic City has taken part of, Dubai was ranked fourth city worldwide in the most sought after education destination, and it looked at a student choices from China all the way back to North Africa, and it actually stepped up many known international hubs of education. But it's also everything that Dubai and the UAE has to offer. It's the three T's, the tourism, trade, and transport. Everything here is world class. The ease of doing business, the access to a vibrant, well-educated, motivated, young talent makes it very attractive for a top business school like MBS to come and operate here. It is the TCOM education cluster, the free zone for education, is the first of its kind dedicated free zone for education. So the choice was really very easy, and it is, I always say that Dubai is one of the best places in the world now to live and work, and we're very lucky to be working and living under the leadership that allows and empowers entrepreneurship, as well as obviously boosts business and women up to board levels, which is obviously a subject close to heart.
Right. Yeah, I think they're leading the region in terms of the women's emancipation movement across the GCC, mm-hmm. and in many instances are the benchmark in so many areas. So do you have female board members, I guess, at MBS as well?
Well, I'm very, very lucky to be working in an organization that I really don't have to go far for inspiration. Our dean is an accomplished female professor, Fiona Devine. The head of the university, the vice chancellor, Professor Dame Nancy Rothwell. MBS has 6 international centers around the world, and they're all led by women. So we're very proud to have a female-led business school and a university.
Excellent. Well, I think they said if women's penetration in the workplace echoed what we saw in Western markets in the GCC, and there's obviously some countries which are considerably lacking, Dubai, not, you know, UAE, not one of them, that GDP across the region would increase by as much as 22%.
That's right. And I think we've all seen the benefit of having an engaged female workforce. what a better way to transform societies, organization, by empowering women in business. And their ability to lead is innate. Women in the workforce play on their nature, ability to nurture and develop talent. The soft skills that are now really required in our business, emotional intelligence, the ability to react, the resilience and agility. It's second nature to female business work traits now.
So you are saying that women are more nurturing, warmer, more emotionally intelligent in the workplace than men?
I think we have some what they now call soft skills that are required in the business world. And we don't need to be trained to do that. Women as leaders have that ability to look beyond what the workplace needs now and look at developing second and third level leaders that will succeed.
I mean, when you actually are on the front lines, though, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that women are actually more aggressive in the workplace than men. And obviously, sometimes when you confront them, they say, you have to be, because, you know, they feel that they're on the back foot. And this data is really asymmetrical to the data you're presenting, that there's this warm, nurturing woman. But, you know, at the end of the day, is there really data suggesting that what you know, these claims, or where do you really sit on this? Is it not true that women can be, you know, fairly?
Well, I see that we are at the golden age now for women in business. It is as good as it gets. I think we have talked a lot about gender equality and quotas and the need to have legislation to empower women. I think it's a matter of choice. I think we have and we need as women all that is required to succeed in business and build a very strong foundation. We have a lot of role models in family business, in government. Look at the UAE. I think it is really up to us. We don't need to fight that fight anymore. I don't think we need to prove anything. Women are being equipped with business education, using entrepreneurial projects to defy the glass ceiling when you work as your own boss. The workplace is more receptive for women now. It is very portable, mobile. Technology is enabling women to work at their own pace. I think we're now competing with other women and men equally. It is up to us what we do with what's being offered to us.
The women that I've interviewed, I'd just like to ask you, you know, you don't have to answer this question,
but
you know, I was talking with some of the women, and as an executive search professional, I place, you know, some very, very strong, powerful women in roles. And I asked them, you know, what's going on here? You know, do you experience this kind of discrimination in the workplace? And they said, you know, said to me, you know, Shane, it's not the men in the workplace that you have to watch out for. You know, they said that the biggest hurdle are the other women in the establishment.
Well, I think there is a war on good talent out there. And I don't think it's a matter of male-female anymore. I think with Dubai attracting many multinationals, new businesses, all the initiatives that if you blink, you'd miss an important initiative around you, there is a war on talent, and you need to retain the best talent that you can. Again, gender equality, I think it's getting old.
Okay, so you're sidestepping the whole question altogether. That's very, very diplomatic of you, but yeah. So we'll just let that be. But when you started out, you know, were you naturally a leader? I mean, you took on a big leadership role. You're jumping out into, you know, the middle of a greenfield space. You had been here since 1999, but at the end of the day, it's not necessarily your original stomping ground. What were you like in grade school and high school? Were you a natural leader?
I was told since a very, very young age. My late father made me believe that I'm a boss, I'm a leader, and I acted as one, and I became one. I wasn't a student, and I think if you're good in something, you'll always be good. If you're hardworking at school, you'll be hardworking when you grow up. But I have been in management education for almost 20 years now. Most of my experience and career was in setting up businesses, mainly regional hubs and profit centers. But I think I had my first break in Kuwait, where I was born and brought up and educated. And my very, very first boss, Dr. Nabil Qaddoumi, who believed in me as a very young female, gave me my first break. And again, I became what I practiced. I then continued to work with higher education and with a British government-funded initiative for education. But I've had passion for building up businesses from scratch. I think the creation of this has become very personal to me. It has been until I had my first child. It was my first baby, and the achievement that I was proud of the most. I've seen the transformation of those students that we have graduated from MBA, the way this program has changed their lives. And it's very, very rewarding. The success of the students, of the graduates, made me get attached to this industry and really survive all the hurdles along the line.
This is the story of Randa Bisiso. She is the founder of the Manchester Business School in Dubai, which opened in 2006. She's been the driving force behind the business school's success. She's going to be giving more of her insights on the road to the top and how to, I guess, if you ever wanted to start an academic institution, this would be the interview to listen to. But also, if you just wanted to get in the driver's seat of your career, which is something she's definitely done.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Randa Bisiso, the founder of Manchester Business School. Randa, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
And, you know, so it's been quite a challenge. I mean, you started up a business school, you know, by design, I think business school students are meant to be analytical and to punch holes in things and give you a hard time. So I can't imagine a tougher student body to manage than a business school one. But what's been the biggest challenge you've ever faced, personal or business? Has there ever been a dark moment where you felt like you just were going to lose it?
Well, as I said, we started with a very small cohort, 25 students, 8 years ago, and we scaled it up to 1,600 students that we've helped join the program. The operation started from my kitchen, literally. My office for close to a year was a coffee shop in Burj Oman, and this is where I put the strategy for the school. So turning a small startup into an SME in its own right, a very successful global business school, has been a great achievement. Along the line, of course, scalability while maintaining quality is always a challenge with, again, retaining the best talent that you have working in an attractive place like Dubai. Personally, I've just survived a tough personal and health spell. I've survived a broken arm, a dislocated knee, an ulcer.
Oh my God.
I'm a single parent for the past 4 years, and I've survived the very difficult health issues in the past few months, but I've turned the corner. I've just been last month awarded as one of the most powerful women in the Arab world by Forbes. Life cannot get any better. My 5-year-old Maya is a constant reward, and a confirmation that I'm doing something good. MBS is growing from strength to strength. Life cannot get any better. So just keep going on. I think persistence, perseverance is something that I've continued to fight. And when you think it's getting dark, this is when the first sun ray will shine upon you.
How did you dislocate your shoulder and your knee at the same time?
Well, I'd love to say it's an exciting water sport or something, but it was a very trivial accident. I did jump off a plane a few years ago, and I didn't even scratch a skin, but I just tripped in front of my house, and I broke an elbow a few months ago.
Oh my God!
I know. But I was on a wheelchair when we had our very first graduation for Manchester Business School last year. But I was on a wheelchair, and I did attend the ceremony when His Excellency Sheikh Nahyan came and celebrated our very first batch of our graduates in Manchester Business School. So I guess I don't take no for an answer, but health could be a reason to be put on a frame of mind that will stop you. It may slow you down. It may help stepping out of a situation to gain different perspective. But I've always been a fighter and a survivor.
Sure, though, that is great. Great that you bounced back so well. I think the Dalai Lama said, the Westerner spends his health to gain their finances, and then spend their finances to get their health mm-hmm. back, and then when they die, realize they haven't really lived at all. But it's an interesting conundrum that we do, and I think we always underestimate that our health is our wealth. But the audience just keeps sending in a whole bunch of questions. I think the first one here is, I'm stuck in a sales manager position. I just hit that glass ceiling. What's the best advice to go up the ladder further? So this is an individual who's really stuck and wants to get up the ladder. I mean, what my humble advice would be is not to focus on what you're going to get out of your career, but who you're going to become. And are you really focusing on becoming the best salesperson you possibly can? Or are you trying to focus on what qualifications will get you the next promotion in the sales career path? And I think when you look at what makes a great salesperson versus what gets you the next promotion, you'll find that key that will unlock that door. But Randa, what would your advice be?
Well, I guess in the case of our caller, if he feels he's stuck and he is not in a situation to step up within his organization or his current field, maybe he needs to step out. And business education is often a tool that is used by our students to either step out to a different career, change fields, sectors altogether. So be it an MBA or any other professional qualification that will enable that person move either horizontally within his organization or step out and try something else. Business education is a tool, is a powerful one, but first and foremost, they need to evaluate where they are at their careers. Why do they want to do the career move? Is it monetary reward? Is it they've stopped waking up in the morning and wanting to go to that organization? If the passion is lost, maybe he's not in the right organization, and he needs to look at the drives to move out or move up within that job.
I think this really seems to be a theme that's coming in, is that people want to change their career, they want to change industry, they want to change function. Is a business degree really the right option for someone who wants to do that?
It's certainly a trigger. People consider MBA studies either to change career, switch paths, or to gain monetary rewards. set up their own business, of course, perhaps compete internationally. So a qualification from a top business school will enable someone to have more options within the career path.
And I always advise people trying not to switch industries, but I also advise doing the MBA will also help you, but changing functions within the industry. I mean, you take, for example, stocks. The guy, someone says, I don't like financial services, I don't like stock markets, I like media. Well, don't just ignore, you could be a business journalist, and now you're reporting on the stocks, but you didn't lose that equity that you built up. And so maybe use the MBA to still switch your functions or switch, the type of job you're doing, but try to keep that industry experience, because that's what you build on. And you yourself say, one of your competitive advantages is you've been 20 years in the education business. I mean, what's your take on that? Does that give you an advantage over other individuals in the profession, that you know the business inside out? You've taught, you've built schools, you've done the financial plans, you've taught the courses, you know this business.
It's important to know yourself, and in the case of just a degree on its own would enable that individual to get the fulfillment and the most out of his career switch. If he's pursuing a part-time degree, it will give him the ability to practice what he's studying. So it's still be able to know whether this is the right calling for them. The networking is an important element of the business studies. Your degree, your certificate is as good as those who are studying with you. In terms of a brand, in terms of networking. So this is an important element, not just the degree on its own, how it's being delivered. Is there a global element, the practicality of it, etc. In terms of competitive edge, staying in the same industry for a long time doesn't necessarily guarantee success. I think in my case, I've been lucky enough to approach the education, training, and developing consultancy aspect from a different angle, from a client at one point in time, a provider as another. But it's the passion what keeps you going, reinventing yourself as you go, keeps you young and keeps you going.
Someone is asking here, they want, what's the best business school in Dubai? And you'll have to try not to be biased in this in this one. What's the best business school in Dubai to pursue an advertising course?
I think we're very, very lucky to have ample choices and options here in Dubai. We have more than 30 international branches of higher education institutes. In Dubai Knowledge Village, Dubai International Academic City. I would advise the caller to visit the Dubai International Academic City and Dubai Knowledge Village. The support team there is very, very knowledgeable, and they'll be able to direct him and counsel him to the right course, whether it's part-time, full-time, undergrad, postgrad.
Oh, this I one, can't he said part-time. He wanted okay. Part-time.
I think there is a lot of choices in Dubai Knowledge Village. I wouldn't be able to name one.
But the other great thing is all the course material is literally online now. And, their Stanford professors are putting all their courses online. So, you can obviously go to a place like MBS and get that qualification. But you can also, go to the library, go to Amazon, get the top 5 best-selling books on advertising and make your own home degree, and apply the knowledge. It's the knowledge application which is more than the knowledge acquisition. And it seems like people don't care about either. They just want the qualification.
Well, the Coursera MOOCs now is making top schools' programs available online for free. So, and in a way, you're right. If it's the knowledge that our caller is after, there are a number of ways to do it. But the applying that knowledge, being able to be with others studying. The face-to-face time, the guidance from either academics or other peers is priceless, and I don't think it can yet be replaced online. But certainly, I mean, the University of Manchester is one of the first adopters of Coursera, and we have also a course online.
This is Randa Bisiso giving you the insights on how to manage your career and what role education can play in helping you catapult yourself up that corporate ladder. She's the founder of Manchester Business School, and we'll have more from her in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Randa Bisiso, the founder of Manchester Business School in Dubai. She's also been listed as one of the most powerful women in the Arabian world by Forbes Middle East. Randa, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So, you know, when we look at it, it's on one side, you're a business school, and you know, when you're driving your own strategy and your own business, you can't be a case of the shoemaker's kids who have no shoes. You know, here you're in a very competitive market. There's over 30 MBA programs that we could choose from, and that number's probably be changed by the end of next week. And on top of it, you have some really competitive programs here. You know, you have London Business School, you have INSEAD down the street, you have HALT and CAS. These are aggressive brands. Some of them are extremely aggressive, where, you know, I think there might be even a couple schools that have more sales staff than professors. How do you compete in a market like this?
Well, from the very beginning, we have sought to innovate in the region. We've brought a business school associated with a top research university to the region with everything that can enrich our community with it. We have believed in collaboration, and central to our strategy is collaboration with various associations here. We have partnerships with professional bodies such as IMA, ACCA. We are often used as an example of a successful higher education institute operating in the region. We're used as a prime example by Dubai Knowledge Village and Academic City. We carry research. We have carried the first of its kind research on talent and executive education in the marketplace with Dubai Knowledge Village. We have, as part of also our corporate social responsibility, for several years in a row, have launched the Manchester Innovation Awards for Emiratis, which is an initiative by the university and the school to stimulate entrepreneurship and innovation in the region. We are sponsors and supporters of the ROYA program to empower women in the business and equip them with the right education and business skills to set up own businesses. So we're very much part of the community. Our presence here is beyond just the MBA program. The education landscape is widening, is deepening, and there is a need to offer different means of education and career progression to the young and professional, very busy workforce and talent here in the region. And we work with a number of multinationals on executive education, leadership development. So our presence here is long-term. We have set up a very strong and active alumni association in the region to continue to give back to the community and be engaged in actually fulfilling the gap, the talent gap and the skills gap required here.
When you look at what it takes to make a world-class business school, are we not really outgunned here? Because when you look at the Americans, you know, seem to be leading this race quite effectively, and in fact are the inventors of the MBA itself. But when you look at the academic landscape in the United States, there's 76 endowments, educational endowments, over $1 billion. In the UK, just to benchmark, there are maybe one or two. Oxford and Cambridge, and I think one of them is shy of the billion-dollar mark. You know, this is a huge difference. You know, how are you going to compete with someone who has, you know, huge financial backing, more than most corporations do? How are you really going to compete on the global scheme of things? One, and two, what is it that really makes the top business school?
Well, Manchester Business School is a global business school with a global footprint in 6 international centers and the heart of regions, business regions that we are operating in. We have a very successful, obviously, operation here in Dubai, in the heart of the Middle East. We have also started a center in Shanghai 5 years ago, followed by Miami in the States and in Brazil. We also have centers in Hong Kong and Singapore and obviously in Manchester. It's a very, very global business school that operates globally on its delivery, but also its academics. Its material. The Manchester method, which is learning by doing, is at the heart of our delivery. So we ensure that our students have the ability to practice what they're doing, reflect on their learning, and be equipped with practical tools to enable them to benefit from the MBA within a very powerful network. Our alumni network is more than 50,000 across the globe.
So basically, you do not feel that this is an issue that, you know, the Americans are coming to the table with $76 billion funds, that you are, you know, using other strategies to counteract this?
I think there is... the value proposition is different. The way we operate to the needs of business professionals, mid-careers, want to progress their careers. They're looking to get specific outcomes of their MBA, and this is how we cater. So in our strategy, transnational education is extremely important. That's why we operate globally. The global executive can move from Shanghai to Dubai, to the States with the program, and still be able to continue with a degree without putting their career interruption. We have a very strong career and alumni relations to back that up. So it's a different model.
So who is your real customer segment in Dubai? Is it the South Asian population? Is it the expat, Western expat? Is it the UK expat? Is it the locals? Where really your biggest population come from?
We have 85 nationalities on our program from the Middle East. Students from the Middle East are residing in different countries. Half of our students are based in the UAE. The other half are across the region. But again, they come from, as I said, 85 nationalities. Majority are of Arab. So around 45% of our students are of
GCC nationals or
GCC,
Khaliji?
Middle East, wider MENA in general, and the other 50% are the expatriate community. So it's pretty much a reflection of the demographic of Dubai.
Do you have any North Star principles, mantras, or kind of really kind of success principles that you use to manage the business? Where, you know, I think there was one hotel manager, I can't remember which one it was, he said that, you know, if there's not cookies on the pillow, you know that there's major problems in the hotel. You know, are there any kind of key metrics, KPIs, philosophies, drivers, that you use to drive an educational business?
We ensure that the program is the right one for the students we're attracting. It's very, very important that the choice is right from the beginning, that they are engaging with a program that they're investing time and money in that matches their career aspiration. We look to attract high-quality students that are motivated and driven. 90% of our students are self-funded, so they're using their hard-earned cash to do the program. So being committed 100% is extremely important in our choice.
So when you look at, you know, you've started this a school up from scratch, and in any startup there's mistakes, there's times where maybe you go off the beaten track and come back. What's been the biggest mistake you have made, biggest learning as you launch this? Because it's just, there's just too many variables for you to have them all under control at any given time, especially in academic, where you have students, you have teachers, you have staff, you have admin, and then, you know, you have new courses, you have changes in the market. What's been the biggest mistake you've made?
We're very close to the market. We ensure that we work with our students and with our alumni and a number of professional bodies to listen and ensure that our programs are current and updated and really market-led, what are they required. We've last year launched an executive MBA program, which is a very, very exclusive, customizable MBA journey compared, and it's built on the success of our current global MBA program.
So that was your biggest mistake?
I think we've introduced it a year too late. I think we should have, we've had enough signals and signs that our student body and on market is ready for an executive MBA program sooner. So I would have probably done it a couple of years earlier.
Should have done it sooner.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, well, better late than never, so.
True. We're very happy with our first cohort that started in July. They go on a tour around the world, literally. They started their program in Manchester, then they went to Shanghai in September, and they're about to come to Dubai in March. So 20 hand-picked executives from around the globe doing a senior executive MBA program with us.
This is Aranda Basiso, the founder of Manchester Business School in Dubai. She's been the driving force behind the business school's success, and she's sharing some of her insights on that road to the top of the academic industry. We're going to hear more from her in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we're listening to the story of Randa Basiso. She is one of the founding team of Manchester Business School in Dubai, which opened in 2006. She was here in 2005, literally working out of a cafe before the school took off. Today, it's one of the top MBAs in the city. She's been the driving force behind its success. Randa, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you so much.
So when you look back on it, what do you think are some of the major learnings you've had? Because, you know, now you've had 20 years of being in a leadership position, a lot of that in the Middle East as a woman. Again, as you said, you think the sex race is over and it's kind of a dried up topic. And I agree. I think, you know, we should just move on from that. But What have been your key epiphany moments where you're saying, look, these are some of the things, this is the way I need to be thinking, this is the way I need to be approaching my career, approaching my business in order to be successful, where maybe like the young lion that gets kicked off the wildebeest hadn't learned yet back in the day, and where did we see those epiphany moments taking place?
Well, at the risk of sounding as a, you know, a cliche, but positive thinking, and as I said, you become what you practice. Not take no for an answer. Believe that you can do it. My father taught me ethics, commitment, and responsibility from a very, very young age. So at a time where, as a single mother, I was raising a very young child, leading a very successfully a demanding business, I've broken an arm and a leg, had to be forced to think, or maybe at times feel sorry for myself, had to turn that all around, positive thinking and affirmation, believe that you can do it and you will, just move on, get up, carry on, and the tide will change.
I heard it's easier to behave yourself into good thinking than think yourself into good behaving.
True.
So you almost have to fake it to make it, get in mm-hmm. there and get going. But I think people underestimate the power of the subconscious mind and the amount of programming that you need to take, the conditioning that you need to take. What about eliminating negative friends around you? I mean, a lot of people, they want to change their life, but they don't change their environment. They don't change their friends. And they can't seem to get out of that, as you described, that glass ceiling. You know, is that something you need to do, is actively identify and remove negative people from your life?
Well, obviously, influencers are important, but it starts from within. If you eliminate the negativity around you, and even if you move to a new country or a new place, you'll take whatever inside you with you. So it starts, you start with yourself. Certainly no man or woman is an island, so we need the help and the support that we can. I obviously, like all individual achievements in life, are a result of collaboration, and where I am is down to teamwork. My team in MBS, I have a super team, and I wouldn't have reached MBS or where I am without their support and contribution. Certainly my family, colleagues, the people that I believe in, the inspiration that is around me made it possible. But the drive starts from within. Just keep going.
But have you ever had a friend that you felt is negative, you need to remove? Like, I think Les Brown says, some people are so negative, they'll go in a dark room and start to develop. You know, is that part of the journey that you need to kind of shed those individuals? Have you ever had that experience, or you've only been surrounded by positive, shining people that just promoted you?
I think it happens. It happens almost organically. You attract people that you would want to be with. I think the process of elimination happens naturally. You don't need to make an effort to attract a like or attract positive influence in your life.
What's your advice to, you know, those individuals who want to move their career forward? And, you know, I think you're dealing with a couple different groups. Obviously, you have those individuals who are just being released, fresh graduates into the market. But you also have, as you said, those executive MBAs. These are senior mid-management people who are looking to get into the C-suite. What's your advice for those two groups?
Absolutely, perseverance, persistence, and commitment. If you can imagine it, if you can dream it, you can do it. I've seen the transformation of close to 500 that graduated from one of the toughest MBA programs around, and they read the newspaper in a new way. It changes the way they look at business, they look at life, to be able to manage career pressures, family, as well as a demanding top class degree is an achievement by itself. It's doable. People have done it. So it's a matter of determination, obviously. Time management, family and network support is important. But certainly it is doable, and believe in yourself. Again, you become what you practice. So practice being a success and practice being a doer, and you'll become one.
What about those people who don't believe in themselves? Is there anything that you can do to deal with that? I mean, that's a big, you know, you saw it actually in the last guest, Neil George, who, even though he really was going against his family's wishes, he didn't have a huge amount going from, obviously, he was a bit of a bright spark. He got into Cornell. So, you know, that obviously helps. But he had this unbeatable self-belief, that, you know, unshakable self-belief that he's going to make it in the hotel business. What can you do if you just don't have that anchored within you? Is there anything you can do to develop it?
Well, it depends. How do you find success? It doesn't have to be success in the boardroom. It starts with self-evaluation and knowing yourself, and what is it that makes you wake up in the morning, have that drive, and make contribution and a difference in your society, and the people around you. Not everyone is meant to be a successful CEO, but giving yourself the benefit of the doubt is extremely important. Give yourself the luxury of exploring what you are capable of. And perhaps don't beat yourself up if it's not meant to be a success in that career, in this business line. Again, we're in the land of the dreams in Dubai. People are able to move careers, trial new initiatives, open their own business, entrepreneurial initiatives here. Success stories are around us. So we may stumble a few times, but there we are destined for something, and everyone is good for something, and they just need to find that out.
So, I mean, you're almost insinuating there that, you know, you need to evaluate your work environment. And, you know, one of the things that I find is that people don't start to believe in themselves until they have that one mentor, that one person. And it sometimes just takes one person to believe in them first. And, you know, if I look at the subtext of what you're saying, you know, if you're in a work environment, it's not working out for you, don't stick around. You know, if you have that boss, those managers, some of them are just toxic. They're just not going to believe in you. Get out, find a place that does work as you describe it. It's the land of the dreams. There are people out there who will believe in you. Do you think that people need to do that?
I think people need to have the courage to dream. People need to have the guts to follow that dream, fall down, trial and error. I think the higher the risk, the higher the reward. So they need to take a risk.
Fortune favors the bold.
That's right.
Well, Randa, is there any last words of advice that you'd like to leave us with as we clear the last few minutes here of our Eye on Careers episode?
Well, thank you so much for having me here. I would certainly continue to encourage women in the business to continue to take that leap of faith, continue to take advantage of all the options, opportunities offered to us here. And for all our listeners out there, if you feel you'd need to make a change in your career, transform your life or the organization you're living in, the societies you're part of, business education is a tool. So you can look us up, and we'll be able to offer you a counseling session to help you decide what's the right career move for you at this stage.
Thank you so much. That's Randa Bisiso, the founder of Manchester Business School in Dubai. That's it for this episode of Eye on Careers. And we just want to wish you all the luck in the world chasing your dream. And here's a simple formula to achieve anything in life. Start, don't quit. That's it for this episode. And I'm your host, Shane Phillips, wishing you a great chance at chasing your dreams.